Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia. Here each week to demystify the world of business and investing. I hope you're enjoying your weekend. On this week's show, we'll talk to the director of the new film, Enron, the smartest guys in the room. We'll talk about the latest earnings news from Google and eBay, two stocks going opposite directions. But we begin this week's show by posing a simple question. And it is this: what in the heck is going on with our economy? Thursday was the single best day for the stock market in 2 years, but there was also news this week that inflation is on the rise. And here to help us make sense of it all is Fool Radio economics contributor Charlie Whelan, the author of Naked Economics, Undressing the Dismal Science. He joins us from the NPR Bureau in Chicago, Illinois. Charlie, welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Charlie, the front page of Thursday's Washington Post, my local paper here, opened with this paragraph, and I quote, "Inflation and interest rates are rising. Stock values have plunged. A tank of gas induces sticker shock. And for nearly a year, wages have failed to keep up with the cost of living." End quote. Charlie Whelan, that sounds like a pretty dire picture. When I think about the economy and I reflect on that paragraph, it humors me a little bit to think that that day the stock market zoomed ahead by more than a percentage point. Sometimes if you go opposite the headlines, you do okay. But I think the real question here is our economy okay?
Well, I think your first impulse was probably to flip it over and turn to the sports pages, but assuming there wasn't great news there either, I think there's been a little bit of alarming news in that for the first time in recent memory, I've heard the S word, the stagflation word used. And anybody who came of age in the 1970s remembers stagflation is basically high inflation and high unemployment and relatively slow economic growth. Those things are not supposed to coexist, because if the economy is slowing down and wages aren't keeping up, as you've just talked about, then prices shouldn't be going up either, because that's kind of a slowing of the economy, and basically people moderate their wage demands and their price increases supposedly to take that into account. So the fact that we're hearing stagflation should be a very worrisome sign. We should probably put a little caveat on that, which is that it was only a year or two ago that we were talking about deflation or falling prices. So these things change fairly quickly. But yes, I think there's some glumness out there in terms of the overall economic landscape.
Charlie, my own undergrad economics courses were taken in the late 1980s, and we were, I think, probably operating off of textbooks written a decade before. Stagflation at that time was a relatively new phenomenon. At least that's the way my textbook painted it out, sort of a 1970s thing. But is that really true? Did stagflation only pop up back then, or can we look back over history and see that ugly thing play itself out?
To my knowledge, it was unique to the 1970s, and what makes it interesting and makes an important parallel to what's going on now is that it was also during a time of rapidly rising oil prices. But no, most of economic history, particularly when currencies were tethered to gold or to some other metal like that, consisted of flat prices. Even inflation was a relatively unknown concept, with the exception of sudden bursts when the currency was taken away from that gold tether. And we even had falling prices for long spells, including the Great Depression and other periods. So inflation is relatively uncommon, and stagflation was completely new and unique, and that, of course, made it so difficult to deal with.
And I want to pin down on that word you just used a little bit more, Charlie, inflation. The Labor Department reported this week that the Consumer Price Index increased by 0.6% in March, its biggest rise, it was said, since October. The Consumer Price Index, of course, measures inflation at the retail level, but it's a number that not a lot of people actually understand. And you and I have talked about this before, but I want to talk about it more. It's not even necessarily that accurate a picture of our economy anymore, is it?
No, there are two curious things about inflation. One is that it's not inherently a terrible thing. If we could go out tomorrow and henceforth every price, every wage, everything we pay for went up by 8% a year forever, it wouldn't matter, because your wages would be going up 8%. What you spent them on would be going up 8%. Everybody could predict that. So when you got a mortgage, they just assumed that your house price would be going up 8%. So the fact that we've got prices going up is not terribly bad in and of itself. The problem is we can't predict it. And it's also not uniform across the economy, which gets to your second point. which is that measuring inflation is far, far from a science. So if you think about it, inflation's basically rising prices. But rising prices of what? Some prices are going down, other prices are going up. What prices matter anyway? So basically, the government, when they measure the inflation figures, have to first define the basket of goods that matter. So there actually is a basket of goods, and it consists of about 1,000 items that the average person would use. It's everything from bread to certain kinds of entertainment, hotel rooms. And then they have to actually go out and measure those prices month after month. There really is no shortcut to figure out how all those different prices have changed, and then they take an average. So it's unscientific both in the basket of goods they choose and also in the way they measure them. And then you weave in added things like quality improvements. You know, if the television that you go out and buy today costs more than the television 20 years ago, but it gets 200 more channels with better quality, you know, is that price comparison really accurate anyway? So there are certainly a lot of uncertainties underlying what we take as a very precise figure.
And Charlie, you're talking about that basket of goods that we're measuring. Does that include my Lord of the Rings DVD? I mean, how recent is this basket of goods?
They make a great effort to try and introduce new goods into the basket that reflect changes in our lifestyle. But that notwithstanding, there are some real policy implications here. If you're 70 years old, your basket of goods looks a lot different than my basket of goods. It's going to be far more heavily weighted towards healthcare, for example. So the true cost of living for somebody in a different cohort could be dramatically different and changing at a much more rapid pace. So when we say index Social Security benefits to inflation, how we actually measure inflation, what goes into that basket of goods, matters an awful lot in terms of whether we're really increasing benefits to meet the needs of people who happen to be retiring.
Let's move from the economy to another story that caught my attention this week. It was the merger between the New York Stock Exchange and Archipelago Holdings, which was a public company that offered its own electronics-based trading system. This new company will be called NYSE Group, and it's going to be a for-profit, publicly traded company, so now investors can buy stock in it. Now, I've recommended Archipelago Holdings in our newsletter. The stock was up sharply on the news. Charlie, what do you make of the merger and the New York Stock Exchange, in effect, going public?
I'm not surprised at all, actually. One of our futures exchanges here in Chicago went public, and it basically transformed itself from the ownership model of the New York Stock Exchange, which is an exchange owned by its members, those who have seat privileges to trade, into a for-profit corporate entity. But I think the NYSE basically decided they've got to be more nimble, and you simply cannot be that nimble in a competitive environment when you are owned in a collective manner. So they'll move to the way the rest of corporate America works, which is more hierarchical, operated by the shareholders. And I think that you'll see a more competitive institution as a result.
It'll be fascinating to watch. A lot of people for a long time have said that the New York Stock Exchange model of having humans intervene in the middle of the market, making markets, setting prices, as opposed to computers done transparently today through the internet, was a dinosaur. And I think the New York Stock Exchange, in effect, said, you're right. And these days, assuming this merger is approved and goes through, the New York Stock Exchange will be itself, but it will also be ArcaX, a very large ECN electronic computer network, a way that you and I can buy and sell shares of New York Stock Exchange stocks or NASDAQ stocks, options. This is now a full-featured electronic trading company with international aspirations. It's fascinating to watch.
Well, it actually is the same reason that the New York or the Chicago Futures Exchange have come to a similar management kind of structure, which is they have the open outcry trading where people are in the pits. And there was much argument that maybe they should move to more electronic trading. But the folks who own the exchange often only know the open outcry trading. They have a stake in it. That's what they've known for 40 years. So you have institutional resistance to a change that probably makes sense for the institution overall.
Closing question, Charlie. Speaking of futures, are you bullish on orange juice futures?
I'm a big orange juice drinker. But I cannot necessarily tell you which direction the orange crop is going to go. Probably depends on whether there's frost in Florida, California. I'm more of a consumer than an investor when it comes to orange juice.
It's a good reminder to us all, particularly from the Motley Fool radio show where we wear our jester caps and have fun, that you don't actually have to be invested in everything. Stick with what you know. Buy and hold. Thank you, Charlie Whelan, who is our Fool Radio economics contributor and the author of Naked Economics, Undressing the Dismal Science. Charlie Whelan, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Always great to be with you.
Orange juice is so sweet. Applesauce is fun. apple pie with ice cream. What a tasty treat.